Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
House lawmakers try to slip a contentious economic development package worth $250 million through the chamber. How? Zero out the funding.
So this isn't a funding or a GAA bill. We'll be dealing with that over the next couple of weeks as we work with our partners in the Senate. This is simply a process bill.
Also tonight, one of Governor Rick Scott's department secretaries is in legislative limbo.
What were your thoughts on those specific vetoes last year, and did you agree with them or not?
We'll also get updates on a push to up the penalties for abusing elderly parents, as well as the legislative response to a boycott of companies doing business in Israel. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the second day of the seventh week in the 2016 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. The Florida House took up the governor's primary economic development proposition today, but Nick Evans reports House lawmakers are pulling out all the stops in hopes of getting it across the finish line.
In state government terms, Christmas comes when the governor signs the annual budget. And this year, Governor Rick Scott has been clear there are two things he wants to see under the tree, $1 billion in tax cuts and another $250 million in Enterprise Florida funding. He may be disappointed. The Senate is open to the Enterprise Florida proposal, but it's less interested in a big tax cut. The House is just the opposite. Its tax cut package tallies close to the governor's dollar amount, but many members from both sides of the aisle are hostile to the business incentives Enterprise Florida doles out. That hasn't stopped the idea from making it to the floor.
This bill is a framework bill only. It strengthens the process that we're currently under. It provides no dollar allocation in this bill for any part of this program.
That's Bradenton Republican Representative Jim Boyd. He's sponsoring the measure in the House. So, what's his tactic to move the bill through a chamber skeptical of attracting businesses with economic incentives? That's right. Just strip out the appropriation completely. The move drew criticism from St. Petersburg Democrat Daryl Roussan.
So at some point, this bill will have a fiscal. We just don't know what it is at this point, and we've not offered anything towards what the Senate has put in.
Some Republicans took issue with the approach as well. And it's not hard to see why. The GOP's calling card is fiscal responsibility, but under Boyd's approach, the House would relinquish the debate over funding to the Budget Conference Committee. Here's Ormond Beach Republican Fred Costello.
If I understood you correctly earlier, the House is at zero, Senate's at $250 million. Is the only time that we have an opportunity to vote whether we support this program or not on this bill, or will there be a separate vote for how much money the House ends up compromising with the Senate other than only the vote up or down for the budget?
Here's how Boyd responds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hopefully you'll vote on this bill tomorrow, all of us in favor. It's a great bill.
Boyd may not agree, but that's a yes. And the legislative, we'll call it creativity, isn't limited to dropping the appropriation.
Representative, can you tell me why this bill did not go to the next committee of reference before coming to the floor?
That's right. As Deerfield Democrat Gwen Clark Reed points out, thanks to a late change by House leadership, the measure only had to pass one committee before heading to the House floor, while most bills have to run a three-committee gauntlet. Boyd explains.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That is a bit above my pay grade, but this is an important initiative for us in Florida.
And the measure came in for a number of other criticisms as well. House Democrats attempted to add an amendment giving teeth to an existing statutory requirement that Enterprise draw half its funds from the private sector. Boyd says the organization is already complying with the law, and no government reporting has shown otherwise. That's inaccurate. A 2004 report from legislative researchers put the split closer to 85-15 in favor of taxpayer funds. More recent outside reports have found a similar balance. Democrats also took Boyd to task for lowering return on investment requirements. ROI has been one of Governor Scott's biggest talking points for Enterprise Florida. Here he is at the Enterprise board meeting in August of last year.
So the return for Enterprise Florida transactions in the last 4.5 years has been 10 times. We've got 10 times the money we put up. So for our taxpayers, if we put up $100,000, we're getting 10 times that back in tax revenue to the state. Now, Shad, you're an investor. Would you do that deal? Like every day, right?
Shad is Shad Khan, owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the statutory benchmark is actually half that, just 5-1. But Boyd's measure cuts it further, dropping it to 3-1. Tuesday's discussion is the bill's second reading, a phase of the floor process where lawmakers ask questions of the sponsor. The measure is likely to come up for debate and a final vote when the House takes the floor Wednesday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Florida Surgeon General John Armstrong could lose his job if he's not confirmed by the state Senate. Len Hatter reports a key panel decided today to postpone Armstrong's confirmation hearing amid the possibility he would not be approved.
Members, is there a motion to recommend confirmation on tabs 1 through 24 with the exception of tabs 7, 12, and 13? Motion made by Senator Gates. Senator Gates moves to recommend the confirmation of those tabs that just was previously announced.
Republican Senator Garrett Richter chairs the Senate's Ethics and Elections Committee, and each tab number represents a gubernatorial appointee to some board or panel. All such appointments have to have legislative approval in order to be confirmed for their jobs. New Department of Economic Opportunity Secretary Sissy Proctor and Lottery Secretary Thomas Delacensori, referenced as tabs 7 and 13, had no trouble breezing through their confirmation hearings.
While I'm new to the position, I am not new to the agency. I've served at the agency for over 3 years now, and I know that my time at the agency, my experience in the private sector, my education, as well as the dedicated team I have at Department of Economic Opportunity, give me the foundation and the tools that I need to be a strong leader.
Prior to joining the Florida Lottery in 2000, I spent 28 years in consumer product sales, most with Pfizer, as a district manager and a corporate account manager. I spent the last 16 years with the Florida Lottery as a district manager, director of sales, Deputy Secretary of Sales and Marketing, and now Secretary.
But missing was Tab 12, or rather Florida Department of Health Secretary John Armstrong. He narrowly squeaked through a previous confirmation hearing on a 5-4 vote, and many of the lawmakers in that panel also serve on ethics and elections. Republican Senator Ana Terry Flores cast a no vote for Armstrong in the Senate's previous health policy hearing after questioning him about Governor Rick Scott's decision to veto funding for free health clinics.
And you, as the state's top doctor, I would imagine the governor seeks your counsel. What were your thoughts on those specific vetoes last year, and did you agree with them or not?
The Florida Department of Health, under Armstrong's leadership, has been criticized for policy changes that resulted in more than 13,000 sick and disabled kids being dropped from a state health care program and steered into Medicaid managed care. The department has also been under fire for staffing cuts that critics say have hurt health care access in poor parts of the state. Lawmakers are also unhappy with DOH's decision not to monitor pediatric heart surgery centers closer, and the department has also been met with legislative disapproval over its slow rollout of medical marijuana. During the last hearing, people who came to testify for and against Armstrong did not have a chance to speak, and that opportunity was again denied Tuesday after Richter announced Armstrong's hearing would be postponed.
Members, before we move to the next point of business on the agenda, we did temporarily postpone tab 12, and I just want to read into the record. We have a number of appearance records.
The Senate's Ethics and Elections Committee is made up of 6 Republicans and 4 Democrats, including Senators Ana Terry Flores and Oscar Brainin, both previous no votes on Armstrong, and their Senator Don Gates, who voted for him despite expressing concerns. If Gates chooses to switch to a no vote, Armstrong would not be approved by the panel, and he could lose his $140,000 a year job. Governor Rick Scott's aides had tried to convince some members of the Ethics and Elections Committee to support Armstrong right before the meeting was postponed. And during the meeting, Democratic Senator Chris Smith issued this cryptic message.
We will feel more comfortable as we are looking to approve governor's appointments if we feel a part of the process at any point in time. So that the next president could possibly meet with the governor's office and get that going.
So for now, Armstrong remains in legislative limbo. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, senators have passed a bill creating the presumption that equal time with both parents is best for kids. But some experts say that's not always true.
Particularly in early infancy, strong attachment is particularly important for the overall growth, development, and health of children.
An Orlando family comes to the Capitol to make their case for a bill expanding the definition of domestic abuse.
We've been through a lot with my daughter getting killed by my grandson. I think this is a smart thing to do.
Florida lawmakers respond to an economic boycott of the nation of Israel and firms doing business there.
If the companies wish to exercise their free constitutional rights of free speech by joining the BDS movement, that is fine. We won't prohibit that.
And the drive to automatically enroll new state of Florida employees in a 401k rather than the traditional state pension plan continues.
Support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
A measure that would create a new presumption for judges making custody decisions got approval from the full Senate today. We get that story from Regan McCarthy.
Under the bill filed by Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee, custody discussions would start under the premise that kids spending equal time with both parents is in the best interest of the child. Lee says he's trying to create more consistency in the system.
You know, you might have an old school judge versus a new school judge. You may have a social conservative judge versus a more liberal judge. And to me, it is the purview of the Florida legislature to set policy. And if we believe that parents should be presumed to be equally qualified to raise their children in the 21st century, then we should say so in the statute, lest we leave it to the courts to apply their own opinion.
Lee told fellow lawmakers during a discussion on the Senate floor the measure is personal for him.
I made a promise to a couple of people that are very, very close to me that if I ever had a chance to do something to reduce the amount of litigation in our family law system, if I ever had a chance to create greater predictability and reliability based upon the facts of the case and not the whims of the system, that I would do it.
But the measure has faced its share of opposition. Joan Younger Meek is a pediatrician and member of the Florida Breastfeeding Coalition. She spoke during a hearing on the bill before the Senate Rules Committee and says spending a week with one parent and then the next week with another is not always in the best interest of a child and could in fact be detrimental for young children.
Particularly in early infancy, strong attachment is particularly important for the overall growth, development, and health of children.
And Younger Meek says there's also the issue of breastfeeding.
It's very difficult to use a pump for up to 7 days in a row. We have very few, actually one in five children who actually meet the requirement of the exclusive breastfeeding. And this provision would essentially mean that none of those children that are affected by this would be successfully breastfed. And there are significantly better health outcomes, developmental outcomes, and healthcare savings associated with this.
Thank you.
But Lee argues the bill gives judges plenty of leeway to decide when a 50-50 time split isn't the best choice for a child. He says a judge would just be required to write an explanation for why they decided a different arrangement is better. And he points out there's a provision that addresses Younger Meek's breastfeeding concerns directly.
Read page 3 of the legislation, item number 11, that talks about the demonstrated capacity or disposition of each parent to provide a consistent routine for the child, such as discipline, daily schedules for homework, meals, of which I assume breastfeeding would qualify.
But Younger Meek says she's worried that's not how the legislation will be interpreted. She believes a judge would also count baby formula as a meal. And during a floor debate on the measure Tuesday, lawmakers raised many of those same concerns. Lake Worth Democratic Senator Jeff Clemens says he worries telling judges to start with an assumption that a 50-50 split is best for a child might create its own bias.
I haven't seen anything that, to me, conclusively says that that is the best place to start, that that is the place where we're going to assume we're starting with the best interest of the child at a 50-50 split. Because it's, I think these cases are all individual cases that that can't be given that declaration. The truth of the matter is that every one of these cases is individual. Every one of them has its own interesting twists and turns.
Despite those concerns, the measure passed, but it's a different story in the House, where the bill has not yet been heard in its first committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Some Florida lawmakers and advocates are pushing for a bill classifying the abuse of a parent as a form of domestic abuse. As Sasha Cordner reports, the measure stems from a case of a woman who lost her life years ago.
On July 15, 2013, my nephew murdered my sister as she was preparing for work.
Alice Flowers is recalling the painful memory of the events that led to her sister Rosemary Pate's death. Pate's son, Everett, was sentenced to 30 years in prison for the murder.
She had suffered years of abuse from him. Although he'd been detained in the Department of Juvenile Justice many times, he was returned home to her where the abuse continued, although law enforcement were aware of the threats.
And Flower says losing her sister like this has been tough on the whole family.
My father has been through a lot. He got a call early one morning. My youngest sister and her husband went to his house to let him know that his grandchild had murdered his child. We have been through the ringer with this.
Flowers just finished a bicycle ride from Orlando to Tallahassee in memory of her sister. Now she's advocating on behalf of a bill that she says would have helped.
Myself and four cyclists have cycled to show how serious we are about getting a bill for more police protections for parents and a bill that would begin intervening early of troubled children.
That bill Flowers is pushing for is sponsored by Orlando Democratic Senator Geraldine Thompson.
We know that in Orange County we have a problem because we've studied it. And 426 children were arrested in 2012 for domestic violence, physically assaulting family members in their own homes. And according to an article, elderly people are likely to be hurt by their children or other caretakers more than any other individual.
And Thompson says she's saddened that even with a restraining order stating that Pate's son had threatened her and she'd been afraid of him for years, the 51-year-old's petition went nowhere.
He had indicated that he would kill her 2 years earlier when he was 16. She said her petition to the judge had not really been acted upon because right now, in the law regarding domestic abuse, the abuse of a parent is not included. And so this bill would correct that, and it would include abuse of a parent as one of the forms of domestic abuse.
The abuse may include aggravated abuse, exploitation of a parent's assets, or emotional abuse of a parent by a biological child. The bill also requires the abuse of a parent be reported to the state abuse hotline. In Orlando, Democratic Representative Victor Torres, the bill's House sponsor, says the measure is needed.
We need to make sure that our parents are protected against abusive children. The abuse tends to begin with verbal abuse, gradually progresses to property damage, breaking the walls, breaking down doors. Ultimately, it becomes physical. And that's when you have the problems. That's when you start seeing the aggression against the parents.
So far, neither the Senate nor the House bill have had a hearing, but both sponsors say they remain hopeful that if it dies this year, it will be heard next session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
In response to the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian conflict, students and academics are calling for an economic boycott of Israel. On Wednesday, the Florida House will take up legislation that could target this boycott, as we hear from Kate Payne.
Some Florida lawmakers want to prevent the state from investing funds in companies that boycott Israel. Here's one of the House sponsors, Representative Rich Workman of Melbourne.
If the companies wish to exercise their free constitutional rights of free speech by joining the BDS movement, that is fine. We won't prohibit that. We simply won't take state tax dollars and let them use those tax dollars. So
this bill comes in response to another boycott, the BDS movement. A push to boycott, divest, and sanction the state of Israel, BDS supporters hope to pressure that country into addressing the plight of Palestinians. Layla Abdelaziz represents the Council on American Islamic Relations.
Palestinian civil society came together and enacted a nonviolent grassroots global call to the boycott, divestment, and sanctions of the State of Israel and companies that are complicit in the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian people.
Boycotting is certainly not new. Boycotters demanded dignity in Birmingham, Alabama, and equality in apartheid-era South Africa. Supporters of the BDS movement say they're exercising free speech and pushing for social change. But some critics cast the boycotters as anti-Semitic. Here's Representative Jared Moskowitz of Coral Springs.
The intent is to delegitimize the state of Israel. See, that's been going on for a long time, decades and decades and decades, and the arguments have just changed.
But which companies are being boycotted? The BDS movement targets Israeli exports like fresh produce and certain packaged foods. But the boycott extends to international companies as well, including Hewlett-Packard, Volvo, and American equipment manufacturer Caterpillar. BDS supporters say the companies are complicit in what they call human rights violations. Here's Layla Abdelaziz again.
For example, the company Caterpillar, which is an American company that's used in the home demolitions of Palestinians in the West Bank, it has been removed from an ethical guidance index because of its involvement in its bulldozers and demolishing Palestinian homes.
Some lawmakers call this a line-drawing problem. Should companies be punished when people unfortunately use their products for ill? Here's Representative Ben Albritton of Bartow.
Boycotting Caterpillar because they happen to manufacture something that is purchased by somebody else, that may be purchased by somebody else, that may be used in a tragic killing like this, would not be fair to the manufacturer, just like the clothes that you have on. Can you guarantee me that somewhere in the supply chain of the production of those clothes that a child was not abused, or child labor laws were not abused in maybe Taiwan or somewhere else?
Still, BDS supporters defend the boycott as free speech. They say punishing or preventing that speech violates their First Amendment rights. Representative Matt Gaetz of Shalimar voted for the bill in a recent committee hearing, but he worries the measure could set a dangerous precedent.
There are elements of this bill that are very troubling to me because of the precedent that this sets. Are we really going to be in the business as a government of punishing companies based on their political views and their corporate conduct?
The House is expected to take up the bill Wednesday. The Senate has already passed the measure unanimously. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, the Florida House debated a proposal today that would automatically enroll new state hires into a 401k-style retirement plan instead of a traditional pension. Republican leaders said the move reflects changing times and a less stable workforce. Jim Ash has more.
The bill by Republican Representative Matt Caldwell of Lehigh Acres targets the 60% of new state workers who fail to make a choice of retirement plans when they're hired. Caldwell said it makes more sense to enroll them in so-called defined contribution plans because more than half don't stay the 8 years it takes to become vested.
And if they don't make a choice, inarguably the better choice for them is to have something to take with them when they leave rather than surrendering it to the pension plan.
At the heart of the debate is the Florida retirement system and its 622,000 active workers and more than 300,000 retirees. Most work for the state, cities, counties, school boards, or state universities. Legislative studies show 23% of the new hires are opting for the 401k-style plans, while just 17% sign up for a traditional pension. What's not clear is how many of the rest are making a choice by remaining silent. Democratic Representative Amanda Murphy of Newport Richey warned changing the default will confuse younger people.
A lot of people take these public jobs for that pension. Are we discussing with the younger people coming on the difference in the pension versus the now 403b plan and what it lacks for them later?
Democrat Dwayne Taylor of Holly Hill tried to strip the default change with an amendment he said would protect the economic future of the fund.
Vote for our heroes and sheroes who protect our community. That's our police officers. They're out there risking their lives every day to protect our community. Those firefighters are on the front line protecting our lives and our property.
But Caldwell said the pension's unfunded liability, known in legislative shorthand as UAL, wouldn't be affected by the bill.
As to the question of whether or not I believe the UAL will be increased in a way that makes the pension system unstable, I do not believe that to be the case. I think the pension system will be just fine.
Pension managers say the FRS is funded at nearly 86%, well above the 80% considered healthy. But Democrats say that's not enough. Representative David Richardson of Miami Beach offered an amendment that would require fully funding the pension within 10 years, but it was defeated. Caldwell added language to the bill that pledges to reduce the unfunded liability by even more next year, but it didn't specify an amount. Richardson asked if $1 would satisfy the amendment. That drew a curt response.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the most legalistic perspective, correct.
Caldwell's bill would also sweeten the defined contribution plan by offering survivor benefits now available only to members of the traditional benefit plan. Various Senate companions are working their way through the other chamber. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.